Welcome to the Commonwealth Matters. I'm Richard Nelson. Thank you so much for joining us. Since the Dobbs decision of 2022, the battle over protecting unborn human life has been waged at the state level, and pro-life advocates are losing in states like Michigan, Montana, Kansas, Ohio, and right here in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. Some are blaming the abortion issue for sinking Republicans at the ballot box. But are strict right-to-life protections the real reason why Republicans are losing? What about exceptions to abortion? In Kentucky, abortion is only allowed to save and preserve the life of the mother. Joining us to talk further about this issue is Rachel Setak. She's an attorney, podcaster, and president of Cincinnati Right to Life's board. Rachel, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
Hey, it's so good to have a fellow podcaster on here. I had to get on your LinkedIn page to see some of the things you've been involved with, and you do have your own podcast program and pro-life advocate on the program as well.
Thank you. I have fallen behind in getting episodes done here recently on my attorney at law advocate at heart podcast. I need to get back on the wagon.
Well, and you are an advocate at heart. We had you in our office just a few weeks ago. Commonwealth Policy Center did a legislative briefing. We had 16 senators and House members here to learn more about how to respond to where the debate is over the sanctity of life, specifically how to respond to the exceptions argument. Some are saying, look, after the governor's race in Kentucky, we need to reformulate as Republicans and as conservatives. We need to rethink this whole life issue. Some are blaming Daniel Cameron's loss to very pro-abortion governor Andy Beshear, blaming him, his position on the life issue, and that Kentucky has no exceptions to the pro-life protections we have on the books. Do you agree with that, by the way? Do you think that that's why Republicans are losing at the ballot box?
I know that that's been a party push across many states, that the state party has encouraged candidates to back off of the life issue, that it's a losing issue. I don't think that it's that the pro-life issue is a losing issue. I think that we have losing messaging. And so when we have campaigns that are trying to fit in the life issue in the same kind of dichotomy as they would other issues, it's different than that. You can't play by the same rules when it comes to messaging the pro-life issue because it is so deeply personal and so deeply affects so many people in each state. So I would say it's not a losing issue. We've had losing messaging.
And you're one well-versed and capable to speak to this because you came off of the Amendment 1 battle in Ohio as a leader in Cincinnati Right to Life and the pro-life movement in the state of Ohio. You came off a very tough defeat. I mean, really, the pro-life movement did, because what Amendment 1 did is it essentially did away with any pro-life protections that the Ohio legislature had put in place. And it radicalized what I'll put in air quotes, reproductive freedom as a fundamental right. It allowed for minors to get abortions without parental consent. It allowed abortions up to the 9th month of pregnancy. It really delved into some other issues as well. Now, a lot of money was spent to get this enacted, Amendment 1 enacted. I guess my question is did Ohio voters really know what they were voting on? I've seen some of the ads, by the way, that you and other pro-lifers ran, and they were alarming as to what this Amendment 1 would do. And yet, did people really know what was involved, or did they not believe the ads that were run?
Yeah, I mean, with the startling outcome that we had, it's hard to believe that truly, upwards of 50% of Ohioans would think that it's okay to have laws in place that destroy protections in the womb up through, the moment of birth. It's very difficult to believe that that's okay, especially when we've had polling that shows that Americans are uncomfortable with the idea of abortion through all 9 months with no restrictions. It's difficult to believe that that the majority of Ohioans are okay with removing health and safety protections for women. I don't think that the voters fully believed the messaging that they saw, because we have to be messaging even in the off season. And so when we see politicians and public officials that come in at the time that it's an election season, I think that the believability of the voter goes down. We have to be educating them when it's not something on the ballot, because once it's on the ballot, I think that they become rooted in kind of what their beliefs are, and they aren't as receptive to the truths about these things that will be on the ballot, or these candidates that will be on the ballot. So it's important that we are messaging and informing voters and touching voters and interacting with voters in the off season, so that by the time that we get to the election, they already trust and believe that you are going to bring forward facts, you are going to bring forward information that they can trust.
Rachel, that's a really good point, and that's a similar observation I see here in Kentucky elections, is that there's a lot of work to be done, a lot of preparation and talking point ideas that need to be shared with the voters, because when campaign season is underway and when voters are getting bombarded with messages from both candidates and both political parties, the believability level decreases. People say, well, these are political people trying to get elected. I'm not sure if I can believe that. Or maybe there's a grain of truth in that, but I'm not sure how much. So a lot of their, how they think about an issue has been formed prior to the campaign. Now, with that said, in Ohio, with Amendment 1, you had pro-abortion advocates like Planned Parenthood, the ACLU, other groups like that, that raised and spent some $25 million to sway voters. And your side, the pro-life community, raised maybe $10, $11 million, I think. So you were outspent. And their messaging, regardless of what we just said, their messaging did have an impact. What was the most powerful messaging that they shared that caused Ohio voters to at least listen to them on the one or two talking points that they had?
Yeah. So like you said, a lot of, because of the aspects of trust and believability came in, what we see is an electorate that truly responds to their emotional and visceral feelings about an issue. And so when we have messaging that's coming from the other side that's saying that that this amendment will force women to have children, that it will take away choices about abortion, and that it will ban abortion, those kinds of words were really affecting voters and convincing voters that this was something that they had to vote in, that it was an all or nothing sum game, that like if they did not vote yes for Amendment 1, that they were going to lose out on protections for miscarriage, and that they wouldn't have access to abortion at all. So that ban word and bringing in these ideas that were completely incorrect about miscarriage, and that the laws on the books right now would not allow them to have an abortion, were just really, really winning the voters over. And when we counter that with the truth, you know, often when you look at messaging, if our messaging has to require more words and more explanation than the other side, then we're fighting an uphill battle. And it truly was so much, like it's so many words to get to the voters about why we already do have exceptions for these things, versus just being able to say like, stop the abortion ban. You know, that's so clear. We need to get in the pro-life movement. And anytime that you're facing a ballot amendment, you need to get your effective, emotionally successful messaging down to a few words.
You did share that at the legislative briefing as well, how we need to capture the emotional truth. The pro-life movement is based on truth, the reality that unborn life begins at conception, that it's a human life and it should be protected in law. And by the way, this is one of the reasons why Republicans are in the majority in the state legislature of Kentucky. I would argue why Republicans have won in other races across the country. It is an emotional issue, it's a compelling issue, but it's based in truth that we're all human beings that had a starting point, and we value that the government protects us and recognizes us by law. But there's this emotional aspect, this emotional truth as well, that I think the pro-life movement needs to address, that a woman in a crisis pregnancy is in a difficult period of her life. And I say crisis pregnancy, maybe unplanned pregnancy. Maybe she's being coerced to have an abortion from a boyfriend or a spouse or a family member. But we need to acknowledge those emotional truths and that emotional heartache as well, don't we?
Absolutely. And, you know, even more than just a boyfriend or a family member or, you know, someone like that, we also see that abortion has this really alarming nexus with trafficking. So it can be a pimp, it can be a trafficker that realizes that commoditizing her body, a pregnancy stands in the way of that. Having a child stands in the way of that. And so we do see that there, it was a 2014 study by the called the Lederer study, and that was in 2014. And it really talked about how when you see women who come to the abortion provider, many times it's out of coercion. It's out of seeing that she would not be able to continue in the trafficking or as a part of prostitution if she does not go for it with the abortion. And so we cannot be complicit in destroying the evidence of a rape or of a molestation or of trafficking. We have to keep in mind that these are potential victims. First of all, we have to have empathy for those women that are in situations that they truly do believe that there is no other way. In her mind, you know, we can be saying like there's adoption, there's this, there's that. But for the woman, she believes that there is no other way. And that's where we have to be speaking into culture. We have to be saying like our heart is with you. Like our empathy is with you. We can't imagine, you know, what you're facing right now, or we can if we have women who can speak that have been there. And we are so heartbroken that you are in this situation, that that someone who you thought would be around and who would be a support in your life is not there. If that's family or that's the father of the child, you know, our hearts are there with you. Our prayers are there with you. Our emotions are there with you, and we want to help. We want to help you get through this. And so it's important, as candidates are on the campaign trail, as pro-lifers are out and about addressing culture, that we don't lose our humanity. We don't lose our empathy, our ability to recognize the heartbreaking situations that bring women to the doorstep of the abortion provider. She's gotten there because we're looking at a culture that says that it's not a life. We're looking at a culture that says, even if it is a life, you should be able to get rid of that. We're looking at a culture that says it's selfish to pursue motherhood. Yeah. It's selfish to bring a child into the circumstances that you have. Instead of coming behind women and empowering them to make the decisions and to pursue women and to pursue motherhood, regardless of their circumstances, it shouldn't be a privilege to engage in motherhood. And it shouldn't be that abortion is the only option. Women and mothers deserve better than abortion.
I want to drill down on the exceptions issue. There was a heart-wrenching ad in Kentucky's governor's race last year with a young woman who was sexually assaulted when she was only 12 years old. It was a family member. It was her stepfather. And she came out against Daniel Cameron, the Republican pro-life candidate, and said, you know, tell Daniel Cameron to back off, essentially. He would have forced somebody like me to have this child. The ad was run by Andy Beshear. And it was considered to be one of the reasons why Beshear won. He played that ad, spent a whole lot of money in the big cities, Lexington, Louisville, Northern Kentucky, and that ad got a lot of traction. People had sympathy for that young woman. And I want to drill into this, though. How do pro-life advocates even begin with a heart-wrenching, horrible circumstance with trauma and pain of a preteen girl who finds herself pregnant? By the way, she did not have to have an abortion. She had a miscarriage, so she did not have to deal with that. But how do we begin to address that trauma? I mean, we talked about it a little bit, but this is the question of the hour for the pro-life community, isn't it? How do we address exceptions? How do you address heart-rending situations like this young woman, Hadley Duvall? and we had a conversation before we got on air here that the pro-life movement hasn't been prepared like it should. We've not been able to come up with a good response, even though there are ministries in place, even though our position is firmly on the truth of defending and advocating for that unborn life, and the truth of putting our arms around that young woman who has been sexually assaulted and might find herself with a child. The reality is we've got to work this out. We've got to find how to respond to these issues and to win over the culture, because right now we're losing, Rachel. The pro-life movement is losing, at least when it comes to ballot initiatives. I do not think that it is the only reason why Republican pro-life candidates are losing, but I do believe that it is really contributing to the ballot initiative losses that we're facing, like you faced in Ohio last year and like we faced in Kentucky in 2022. If you were running, I'm going to put a hypothetical out there to you. If there was an ad like this run against you, and if you were the gubernatorial candidate, the pro-life candidate, and you had an ad like this that came out of a young woman in a traumatic pregnancy who was sexually assaulted, would you have been prepared to have a response to that? How would you have responded? Because it's easy to criticize Daniel Cameron, who I'm a fan of his, by the way. I publicly supported him, but it's easy to armchair quarterback these things. It's much more difficult if you're in the arena. But how would you have responded?
I definitely have more fun advising and commentating on the races than I would running one or being a part of one. Yeah. But what I would advise a candidate to do is not to let those kinds of super successful messaging opportunities go unanswered. Yeah. Is that we cannot allow that kind of pain and that kind of story that would resonate with parents across the state to go without a response. And so I would say that there should be, you should be thinking about this kind of issue coming up, just like in Ohio. You know, Cincinnati Right to Life was ahead of the game, thinking about what would be the response. In our state, it was the case of a 10 or 11-year-old rape victim. And so we were thinking about that ahead of when it came out. So we want to be proactive. We want to be thinking about it ahead of time so that we're not caught off guard, and we don't want to leave it without a response. When it comes to how to respond, again, it truly is starting with the empathy, reminding those that are watching that, you know, we're on the same page about that story resonating with us as humans, as parents, as those who, as women, you know, we understand that, we are empathetic with that situation. And from there, you know, we want to transition to truly talking about how your position is pro-woman, your position is pro-family, what your position is for. Because a lot of times it's easy to get caught up in just being on defense, or to be offended, or to be caught up in just arguing about it. But truly, it's that my position is one that wants to protect women. You can even, if you've been proactive prior to that, you can even talk about how what you have done to prevent this situation from happening. Are you in a state, or are you a state rep that has previously worked to prevent underage girls from having to be in a home, from strengthening mandatory reporting? Have you been working to help rape victims? Have you been a part of efforts to truly protect women beyond just the arena of abortion? And so from there, you know, some points that I would say that a candidate should keep in mind is first, abortion is an issue that is based in an industry. It's driven by an industry. And so it's never going to stop. There's never an exception that's going to be sufficient. We look at Indiana, where they had exceptions for rape, incest, life of the mother, and they still were sued. They were sued in fact, partly by the Church of Satan, because they said that their abortion laws infringed on their religious liberty rights. And so it never stops. There's never a point of concession that can stop the abortion lobby from pushing forward. Second, you know, I would say that it's about looking at how we can build up a base of not just voters that are traditionally pro-life, but also young voters and voters of color that we cannot ignore, that can add to that base. You know, as a Black woman and an attorney, I think that there's a lot of opportunity to bring in these groups of voters, the youth and those of color, in order to build up our base, because we have such a racist history within the abortion movement, and it's willing to recognize that. But what it says is that that doesn't mean that abortion is evil. Well, we're seeing the opposite position when we look at things like how America as a country is regarded by those who are part of reproductive justice coalitions. They say that because America had racist basis, that it is racist today, that these kinds of systemic sources, historical sources of racism should be destroyed. So why aren't we looking at the abortion industry that same way? If it's something that's birthed out of believing that a country and a race is better off with less of those of us who are less human in someone's eyes, then why aren't we talking about how that that should be just a vestige of the past? Why is that still here today as a barbaric assault on our society? You know, these are some of the topics that candidates can be addressing to bring in and to illustrate and illuminate the value that they place on these bases. Opposing abortion is not something that a candidate does because they don't believe in it. They believe in, you know, limiting the potential of their electorate of color. I think that they should be messaging that they oppose abortion because they believe that there is unlimited potential in everyone of any color, of any circumstances, whether they're born out of race or born out of rape, or whether they're born into a family that is not in a great financial position, or that is of a racial minority. They believe that there is unlimited potential for every single member of their electorate.
Very good. If you're just joining us, you're listening to The Commonwealth Matters. I'm Richard Nelson here with Rachel Sitak, and we are talking about the pro-life movement and exceptions. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment. Have you ever thought about running for office or helping on a campaign? Hi, this is Richard Nelson, founder and executive director of the Commonwealth Policy Center. One of the things we do is to help identify conservative candidates and to train them to run winning races. Oftentimes, conservatives don't know where to begin when it comes to elections and running for office. That's why CPC is hosting candidate training to help candidates understand what it takes to run an election and to win. And we need good conservative candidates more than ever before. If you've ever thought about running for school board, city council, any other open seat, or simply helping on a campaign, then plan to join us on February 2nd and 3rd in Frankfurt, where we'll be hosting this event. For more information, go to CommonwealthPolicyCenter.org, and we look forward to seeing you there. Rachel, just before the break, we were talking about if you were governor, or if you were running for office, how would you respond to these difficult, heart-wrenching circumstances of conception? And you had some really important points about being proactive, really not being boxed in, putting the pro-abortion lobby, which is a money-making industry, as you pointed out. It is a big industry in this country. Yeah, very good. Now, Rachel, I'm going to pivot to Kentucky. A bill in the state legislature was proposed to allow exceptions, rape and incest exceptions, into Kentucky's pro-life law. As it is, abortion is only allowed to save the life of the mother. We've been abortion-free for about a year now. Senate Bill 99, though, would change that and allow exceptions. Do you think that if this law were to pass, and I don't see that happening at the moment, it's sponsored by a Democrat who's in the minority. I don't see it moving at this moment. But do you think that that will satisfy the pro-abortion lobby?
I don't. You know, right now in Kentucky, if you are watching just general, you know, TV, You will see ads from Planned Parenthood that are coming up in Kentucky. They're asking for money. You know, it doesn't matter that you give an inch. That just becomes a win. That's what they will market in their donor emails to say, you know, help us continue fighting in Kentucky. We've had a win. It will embolden their base to keep pushing those boundaries and to believe that they're making headway. So this isn't something that can satiate your pro-abortion or voters that identify as pro-choice. That doesn't satisfy the abortion industry. What we can do is we can have candidates that are actively involved in hands-on ways with understanding mothers in their district and what they need. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that we've seen great, great efforts in the campus context with groups like Students for Life. Back in Cincinnati, UC Students for Life was voted the chapter of the year, and they do amazing outreach. They will go door to door and ask moms about what they need and bring them, you know, diapers and supplies and food. Wow. You know, these kinds of efforts that are hands on, not, you know, going to a fundraiser or donating to a PRC. That's all great, mm-hmm. but it's not organizations that win over people. It's yeah. people that win people. It's not That's a movement that wins people. It's them resonating with the stories, the hands-on stories. So I would say that campaigns need to function a little bit differently and learn a little bit from the influencer space of kind of a day in the life, showing what it's like to go talk to mothers who are in need, bring them the supplies that they need, talk about like how this affects their day-to-day life in raising children, support motherhood, empower motherhood, get creative with things that support life, not just what we've stereotypically thought of as just an abortion focus, a fetal focus, as the opposite side likes to call us. Yeah. Expanding that, get creative.
Rachel Cetak, it's been great to have you on the program.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate you guys.
God bless you and you keep up the good work. And if you've enjoyed the program, then please go to your favorite podcast platform and give us a rating. This is really helpful. Also, please tell your friends about us. If you enjoyed this program and think that this content is important and valuable information, we hope to increase our following in 2024. May God bless you with a great year.